Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rockin' Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rockin' Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Happy Tuesday, everybody. The show is now on the go as you can listen to the program on your phone anywhere at any time by listening to us, streaming us at the radio.com app or the CBS Sports app or on Apple Music or watch us at watchda.com. It's also the day after Labor Day, and so now full steam ahead. Wind in our sails. Everybody's back. Good to have the smiling faces back with me here on the DA show. Mraz smiling and with a full belly. Pete the Body Bilotti smiling. Finally, no stress. I'm sure he'll be stressed out by the end of the day, though. But right now, feeling good. Andrew Kaplan, happy, excited. Everybody's happy, go lucky. Football is here. We're back. Full Voltron. Andrew Bogish, back happy, studying rosters. The Delaware Blue Hens again, a tradition unlike any other. So we're all very excited and happy. And it's all going to come to a crashing halt coming up as part of Trash Tuesday, where we will take out the trash. What's aggravating you? What's bugging you? We'll do our trashes coming up here in about 15 minutes from now. Also, Lars Anderson. So you didn't like that idea. Lars Anderson is going to join us. 20-year veteran of Sports Illustrated. He's written a book about Nick Saban's chase of Bear Bryant's legacy. We'll talk about Chasing the Bear coming up here in approximately 35 minutes from now. But can we talk about Bill O'Brien for a moment? You guys know I can be mean at times. I can. I admit it. And I really should, because people have been mean to me over the course of my life. You know, kids picking on me growing up, or bullies, or listeners that hate the show. Twitter can be a cesspool of just meanness. I mean, you know, I've seen it, and I really shouldn't contribute to being mean. But, you know, sometimes it's just so fun. And I'm not better than anybody else. I mean, I try to live a good, healthy life, treat people well, but you know, sometimes it's just too fun to be mean. Just too fun. And so, yeah, I probably could be nicer to Bill O'Brien and not make fun of his butt chin. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I guess it's probably beneath me to call him Butt Chin McGee. Yeah, okay, maybe I shouldn't go on tirades about how sloppy he dresses, like in sweatpants and windsuits on the sidelines as he's a multi-million dollar CEO of a billion-dollar corporation. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't be mean, but God, it's so fun. And you know what? Everybody I've ever talked to that's come into contact with Bill O'Brien has called him an egomaniac. He's an egomaniac. He's an egomaniac. And he treats people like an egomaniac. He pushes them around. He bullies them. He makes things depressing around them. And, you know, there is this kind of weird thing that happens with Bill O'Brien where, because he kind of has this staunch exterior, we'll do it my way, I've got some fire in my belly. And, you know, he's had more success, I guess, than other Patriots assistant coaches and naturally coming out of the Patriots organization. people kind of assume that you know some mystical secrets about football. I think there's a lot of football writers that think he's a really good coach. Bill O'Brien's, he could coach my team any day. You know, I heard this a lot here in New York amongst Jets fans when they had fired all of the bozos recently. But most recently, Todd Bowles. I want Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien's a good head coach. Bill, you're like, well, is Bill O'Brien a good head coach, or is he just kind of mediocre amongst a sea of clowns that makes him seem better than he is? I mean, it's not like Bill O'Brien hasn't been in a really winnable division for, you know, ever, and had some really talented players, you know, like J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins, who are two of the best players of their generation at their positions. I don't know. I just don't see him as anything. I see him as a mediocre coach amongst a sea of clowns, and that people kind of think somehow he knows more than he does. And now you realize something? Bill O'Brien has played this chess game so well that he's now the coach and the GM of the Texans. Meantime, by the way, coach and GM never works. Never works anywhere. I mean, okay, Belichick, fine. I'll give you Belichick, even though he has what I believe is a pretty strong front office around him. I think he trusts Nick Caserio. I think him and Ernie Adams behind the scenes, Ernie Adams pulls a ton of the puppet strings around there in New England and kind of keeps his face and voice out of the mix. But by and large, coach GM combo doesn't work. There's just too much. And the two roles, they don't complement one another. And why it works with Bill Belichick is, number one, he's smarter than your average bear. But number two, he doesn't have to worry about keeping a job. So he's not worried about, I have to win this year or else I'm going to get fired. I want to keep my job. He is constantly looking at 2, 3, 4 years down the line, which is how you build a successful program and organization. And hypothetically, you'd want your GM there for 5, 6, 7 years to build and streamline something. And if the coach doesn't work, well, then that GM could fire the coach and bring in a different coach. Bill O'Brien has now outlived 2 different GMs. He outlived Rick Smith, and they had a power struggle, and Bill O'Brien won that. And then Brian Gain came in and did seemingly a pretty good job, and Brian Gain got canned. And the only guy that's overseeing Bill O'Brien's butt chin right now from calling these shots is former Patriots team chaplain. He got a team chaplain along with him to run this organization. I mean, and no offense to people of the church, but, you know, I don't exactly want my priest running my organization. And I like my priest, but I don't exactly need him running my team. So Bill O'Brien now, they tried to go through hiring Nick Caserio. That didn't work. Patriots said, you ain't going to do that. And so now Bill O'Brien remakes the entire roster and trades away one of their best players in Jadeveon Clowney for pennies, and trades for an offensive tackle that, granted, is good, but he sells off every draft asset they have. Now, I talked about this yesterday. I like Laremy Tunsil, and I like the concept of protecting Deshaun Watson. I don't like the idea that they're selling 2 ones and a 2 for Laremy Tunsil. I mean, if I told you that Laremy Tunsil, the guy with the bong gas mask, just brought back more than it took to get Odell Beckham or Khalil Mack, would you say that's a good deal for the Texans? That's a massive haul. And by the way, okay, so they want to protect Deshaun Watson. Good. And they bring back Kenny Stills as well, who's a good wide receiver for Deshaun Watson. Good. But in 3 different draft classes, 2018, 2020, and 2021, the Texans will be without a 1 or a 2. Think about 3 out of 4 years. 3 out of 4 years, the Texans won't have a 1 or a 2. Either one. Now, let me ask you. How do you build a roster when Deshaun Watson's no longer on a rookie deal? You got to pay Deshaun Watson at some point. And you're not going to have a 1 or a 2 on your roster for 3 out of 4 draft classes? You know, I'm sorry, but what this is the butt-chinned one. Sorry again, I did it. Saving his own ass. This is him, pardon the pun, but the butt's looking out for the butt. The butt on the front's looking out for the butt on the back. Because he's going all in for this year. He's going all in. We've got Tunsil, we've got Hopkins, we've got Stills. We only get a third rounder for Jadeveon Clowney, which seems like a terrible return considering you could have traded him a month ago and gotten far more when he couldn't dictate where he was going and could sign a long-term deal, but now he can't, so you screwed the pooch on that one. But they're going all in for this year, which is fine in a division where Andrew Luck just retired and it's clearly open season. But, you know, if the Texans end up at a very Bill O'Brien-y 9-7, and they don't have a 1 or a 2 next year or 1 and a 2 in 2021, the guy who ends up getting the GM job at some point is going to be like, what am I inheriting here? I like Deshaun Watson. I like DeAndre Hopkins. I like some of the pieces around here. But ultimately, you spent all of the resources that I could have used to actually flesh out a roster here because you wanted to completely remake it in your vision, and you're not even a GM. Like, on the open market, I don't think anybody would have given Bill O'Brien a GM role. If the Texans fired him tomorrow, does any NFL team go, you're our coach and GM? No. Bill O'Brien is crazy like a fox. He maneuvered himself into multiple power struggles, into the winner of them. And, I mean, maybe he was also lucky with the timing. I hate to phrase it like this. I don't mean anybody's lucky in death. But when Bob McNair passes away, you know, maybe something opened up within the organization where O'Brien had been there for a long time. So maybe Bob McNair's son or the family or the organization kind of trusts Bill O'Brien. But I don't know, Mraz. I'm just looking at this from the outside going, O'Brien somehow has been the ultimate survivalist and now has collected all of the power, all of the chess pieces. The only guy that can say no to him is a team chaplain. And he just ripped apart the roster, which, okay, granted, you know, it helps protect Deshaun Watson, but what he traded away was like, we're all in for this year and everything else be damned. And that is very worrisome.
I think what happened here, and just to compare sports to sports, this feels a lot like the Nets trading for Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett as far as mortgaging their future to go all in an era where they had to deal with LeBron James in the East. And it feels a lot like the Texans going all in for this year. Because Clowney, whatever, if he didn't stay healthy, but getting Tunsil on that offensive line and mortgaging all your draft picks, when you still have the Patriots and now Patrick Mahomes to deal with in the AFC, where maybe it wasn't the right time to mortgage away your next 4 years, or maybe the AFC becomes more wide open in those 4 years to play for this year, similar to what the Nets did that year where LeBron James was still at his peak of powers in the Eastern Conference.
Well, and how about using one of the ones you traded away, or the two, for a Laremy Tunsil type?
Right.
I mean, it's not like Laremy Tunsil is this otherworldly talent that you'll never find in the draft ever again. If you draft well, you should be able to find Laremy Tunsil in the first or second round out of one of those three picks you just traded away.
And now having to pay him, and oh, by the way, after this year, likely having to pay Deshaun Watson, you're not truly taking advantage of that quarterback window, because guess what's going to happen when you have to pay Deshaun Watson and pay Laremy Tunsil? You're going to need high draft picks to supplement the rest of your roster and hit on them with ones and twos. They are setting Deshaun Watson up beyond this year for failure for a good stretch of his prime.
Well, what this is about is that I assume Bill O'Brien thinks that if we win this year, we go 11-5, 12-4, I win a couple of playoff games, find myself in an AFC title game. I can't be fired, and maybe they'll just give me the GM role. I think that's what he's thinking. Or if they hire a new GM in the offseason, I definitely can't be fired because I went 12-4.
Yeah, great. So he's just trying to protect himself for 1 year, but in 3 years?
I think so. Isn't that exactly what this feels like?
Right. Well, in 3 years when Deshaun Watson's a Pro Bowler, but the Texans are 6-10 every year, how's that going to look and how's that going to feel?
That's what I'm saying. I really feel like he is in this right now to say, I'm going to set myself up for either getting the GM role full time or I can't be fired by the next GM. I don't see how you can read it any other way.
The butt chin survives again.
When we come back here on the show, Our Trash Tuesday. Who are you trashing? Tweet at me, DA on CBS. We'll do Our Trashes next. This is CBS Sports Radio.
Now get zapped while the sun is out.
Hey, how's it going, DA? Thanks for making driving traffic so easy. The show's great.
I feel good and I'm doing well.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And it's a Trash Tuesday around here. The Taz back with you every single day for 6 shows a week now, including Sunday morning football. So keep it locked in here, right here, every single day. The DA Show, 6 until 9 Eastern, 6 until 9 Pacific, rather. 9 until noon Eastern, right here on CBS Sports Radio. And if you're listening on SiriusXM, that's channel 206. The game plan for success, sponsored by Napa, taking a look at a team and their plan for success, the Packers. They open up season number 100 Thursday night against the Bears. Green Bay looking to get back into the playoffs. They missed the postseason each of the last 2 years. Mike McCarthy is gone. Matt LaFleur is in. How's Aaron Rodgers versus Khalil Mack going to look coming up on Thursday? A win on Thursday for the Packers, a long way towards confidence building in their new head coach. Napa believes every driver deserves quality parts. That's why you can do it yourself at Napa Auto Parts or have it done for you at Napa Auto Care Center. Either way, that's Napa know-how. Oh, yeah. It's the smell of Trash Tuesday.
So, what's eating you?
People that get in the left lane and drive the speed limit.
I gotta trash the NFL, man.
Trash my ex-girlfriend.
You want me to trash that?
Trash Tuesday, my favorite day of the week, not for nothing.
Time to vent. We take it out like the trash. It's Trash Tuesday.
All right, Mraz, back after a 5-day vacation. I don't know what could be irking you, but take it away.
I'm just going to trash, and I'm not going to name any names here. I went with a cable provider that I happen to love, but I didn't realize one downfall. There's no time on my cable box. No time at all.
Huh.
So I didn't realize I don't own a clock. I never owned a clock. The times in every room were just on my cable provider.
What's your alarm clock?
Well, my alarm clock's my phone, but I don't often look at my point is I wake up 2 a.m. Shawnee has to use the bathroom.
Sure.
I don't know what time it is because I can't see a thing. I'm stumbling in. I go to the bathroom and I go, do I turn on the shower? It has to be 5, right? I start playing a mental game because my phone, I left charging in another room because my wife had the alarm on. It was a whole massacre this morning. I realized it was still only 2 a.m., not 5 a.m. And I just realized, you know what? If you're going to provide some kind of cable service, let you provide being the clock in everybody's room.
Trash them.
Hold your nose. That's some smelly rubbish.
What's on your cable box?
It's just like they make it all sleek now. Like, so it's just like a small little router adapter thing.
There's no screen.
I have the same thing. There's just a light that it's on. That's it.
That's it.
No time.
I need a time. Like, now I got to go. What? I got to go to Lowe's and buy clocks. I got to Target buy clocks. Who has clocks? The Roman numerals? Do I go with those? I can't even read them.
No, don't go with those.
Yeah, you'll never do that one.
Do I get the electric clocks like this? But that's not feng shui.
Because your new house is all about feng shui.
I just keep hearing that word a lot lately, so I'm using it.
I had the same situation in the bathroom. I needed a clock because I oftentimes don't have, I'm taking a shower or something like that, getting ready for work. I don't oftentimes have my phone in the bathroom.
Sure.
I told the Bourbon Bell, I need a clock. We got to have a clock in the bathroom. We now have an old school hands clock in the bathroom. You need the clock. Nobody has clocks anymore.
Yes, clocks are outdated. We took them for granted because of cable providers, and now they're phasing out the clock. Where do we get our time?
Took them for granted because of phones, too. How many people just don't have a watch anymore because they have a phone?
Right, but I don't want to keep looking at my phone, bent down, scrolling over them in my underwear. I rip them in half trying to find the phone underneath the bed to find the time. I can't do it.
Chubbo.
All right. Pete the Body Bellotti, who are you trashing?
Well, DA, I am trashing bad fans. And I'm going to specify by bad fans who go to games and the game is the furthest thing on their minds. The fans that get there late, like right before the game starts, but don't go to the seats until maybe the sixth inning, the third quarter. And then they decide to play the musical chairs game with everybody who's been there.
I agree with you. Yes, I agree with you.
Enough. Enough of it. I mean, I get there on time, first inning, watching a baseball game, and then you got four people coming in the sixth inning trying to find their seats.
Saying, these are my seats.
Right, and they're in the wrong section. It ends up after 10 minutes, they're in the wrong section. I mean, get them out.
Trash them. That's exactly right. Trash these people. Because
Splash Brothers. More like the Trash Brothers.
I had this situation last Wednesday. I took my family to the Mets game, and it was one of those rainy, it was the rainy game that was drizzling all day long. So we get to our seats, probably, to be fair, the second inning, and I wipe down all of the seats that we're going to use. There's five of us, so I'm wiping down the seats, and we're sitting there, and in about, I think, top of the fifth, maybe bottom fourth, but I think top of the fifth, my brother and sister had gone to go grab food, and these two people come and they sit down in my brother and sister's seats. And I go, oh, sorry, somebody's sitting there. They go, these are our seats. And I go, oh, all right, sorry. Like, I had committed some huge sin or faux pas, but you hadn't been here for the first five innings. I mean, now you're coming and going to throw me attitude, and I dried off your seats for you? I mean, get them out. These are ridiculous. If you haven't been there for the first half of the game, they're not your seats anymore.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You were sitting in their seats, and they're wrong?
Well, the whole...
What are you talking about?
The whole section...
You're stealing seats.
No.
Are you sitting in worse seats than you had? Or are you sitting in better seats?
It was the same row. We were just closer to the aisle because the entire section was raining, so nobody was there.
Okay.
So we were like one seat off.
That's not DA. That's not DA's fault on that. It's get there on time.
No.
Get there
on time.
No, but you can't tell them these seats are taken when they're their seats.
So they could get there in the eighth inning and just
exactly.
Sit in the seats.
Yes, that's how it works. That's why that's your ridiculous. Ticket has a seat number on it.
If you punted on the first half of the game, you can't throw attitude.
You were late yourself. It was like you were in there for the national anthem.
I was there at the bottom of the first or the top of the second. I don't know. But look, you can't throw me attitude. Okay?
That's fine.
I easily moved. I was like, oh, sorry. Yes, I will get out. But like, how dare you sit in my seats? You haven't been here for 2.5 hours.
Just watch the damn game at home. Don't bother me.
Stay home, okay? Stay home.
You were in your seat for all nine innings, Pete? You didn't go anywhere?
Yes, I was.
And okay. I can vouch for this. We went to a Mets game together two seasons ago. Me and Mraz spent the first three innings finding the best burger in the concourse.
Right.
Pete went right to the seat.
Right.
Top of the first, he was there.
Pete,
by the time we
Pete
got up
was
there,
right. Four bobbleheads on his lap. I came up with 15 pounds of fries and four
he
beers.
He was there solo for the first three innings.
Were you keeping score too, you nerd?
No, I'm not Evan Roberts. I don't keep score.
He is disciplined about this.
I am.
He's a man of integrity. I respect Pete about that. Andrew Bogus, who are you trashing?
I'm going to trash those, and I keep running into these people, in particular at the beach, who are doing like a full-fledged social media Instagram like photo shoot.
Oh, get real.
Like posing in the water the jetty and the waves behind
them. Oh, I hate them.
And even if you're a 10 and you like deserve to be photographed professionally like that,
Yeah. You
can't do it at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday at Point Lookout on the, the southern coast of Long Island. And like your boyfriend or your poor boyfriend who's roped into this with her girlfriend who thinks she's, you know, Emily Ratajkowski standing up there in this bikini, flexing and pointing, and he's taking 7,000 iPhone pictures.
Yeah.
Get them all out.
Get them all out.
Beep, beep. Sanitation just arrived.
Because of all the technology on our phones and the filters and what have you,
right.
There are so many people that are so not handsome or pretty that think that they're just models now.
And pictures are fine. The idea that you're doing a photo shoot now, like for a bikini catalog, laying in the surf while my kid's building a sandcastle next to you, is just ridiculous.
I love when they do it in the ocean and then something happens and then you record that.
Well, that should happen always.
I don't know if you guys watched College Game Day on Saturday. I was so excited. College Game Day is back. It's one of my favorite sports shows out there. I just feel like it's so well produced. They have such creative content. I really love it. I love the fans behind them. So they're obviously... They're doing the Oregon-Auburn game, and they do this story on the transfer portal. And Tom Rinaldi, who I love, we've had on the show, does what I thought was kind of a hokey piece of the transfer portal because it had like Star Wars, sci-fi, like it was some type of crazy scientific thing because it's called a portal. Okay, the piece itself I thought went flat, but fine. They come back to the set, and you have Kirk Herbstreit on set. You have Desmond Howard on set, and you have David Pollack on set. And they toss to the bear. They toss to the bear, who's the bald, fat producer that does some picks. And they say, sounds like Mraz. They say, Bear, what do you think about the transfer portal? And I nearly took my phone off the deck and threw it into the pool and dove headfirst into the ground. I said, you have three former All-Americans on your set. You have the guys, some of the best analysts in the world of college football. I want to know what they think about the transfer portal, not your gambling producer. What do I care? And they have made the bear, and he might be a nice guy, they made the bear such this integral part of college game day. It's like, no, you can go to him for the Appalachian State over-under. I need to know from Kirk Herbstreit what he thinks about the transfer portal. You have over-engineered this. You've thought way too much about trying to get the bear involved. Who the freak cares what the bear says about the transfer portal? Could you think of a less important take than the bear on the now, the transfer portal is like an enormously important thing here because Justin Fields is able to go from Georgia last year to another contender at Ohio State. You've got Jalen Hurts able to go from Auburn 1 year into another potential contender at Oklahoma. These are super important player movement. I mean, Jacob East in Washington, go on and on the list. What the bear says is no bearing. You're paying these guys millions of dollars to talk about college football. Millions. Desmond Howard, David Pollack, Kirk Herbstreit must make $10 million between them. They must. And they're going, and what, Bear, what do you think about this? What does the bear think? Who cares what the bear thinks? Just make sure the camera's on, Bear. I mean, are you serious? I mean, you have now already taken one of the great sports shows ever, and you've already screwed it up. You can't screw it up. It's impossible to screw it up. This is an important topic, and you went to the bear? The freaking bear, it's week one. Okay, you know, if this is the one game where you're doing like Holy Cross against, you know, Bentley, that dumb game that they do.
Easy.
You know, and you want to ask the bear something about that because there's nothing else to break down. It's week one of the college football season, and I've got Herbstreit leaning across the desk going, and so Bear, what do you think about the transfer? I don't care! The bear.
Stinky debris.
DA, personally, I love the transfer portal. I think it really brings a lot like free agency to the table here for college football. I think this is exciting.
And if we had Bart Scott in here, I would throw something through the glass to shut you up because I would want to hear what he had to say. When we come back here on the show, Lars Anderson joins us, 20-year veteran of Sports Illustrated. We'll talk about the other bear, Bear Bryant. The important bear in college football. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Muffins, mornings, mothership.
Oh, okay.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
42 minutes past the hour. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. And Sunday morning football returns coming up this Sunday. You can watch it wherever you are. Whatever duties you got going on Sunday, you can watch us at WatchDA.com beginning at 10 a.m. Eastern time right through noon Eastern. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227 brought to you by Geico. Everyone, quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Homeowners, renters, motorcycle insurance too. Get it all. Geico.com. And our unexpected moment of the week brought to you by ExxonMobil. How about Monday afternoon? Yesterday when the Rangers shut out the Yankees 7-0. Normally a 7-0 baseball game in early September shouldn't turn heads. But unexpected because for the first time in 221 games, the Yankees had the second longest streak without being shut out since 1900 when Babe Ruth and the Yankees did it from 31 to 33. The last time the Yankees were shut out was June of 2018. If industrial plants could capture CO2, think how we could help lower emissions. ExxonMobil is working to make it happen. That's the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Our next guest wrote for Sports Illustrated for 20 years, and he had covered motorsports and college football for SI. And he has a brand new book out called Chasing the Bear, How Bear Bryant and Nick Saban Made Alabama the Greatest College Football Program of All Time. And a lot of eerie similarities between the two men. Lars joins us this morning on the show. Lars, good morning.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us. And one of the interesting similarities between these two men were that they lost their dads early in life. And certainly Nick Saban consistently talks about the effect that his father had on him growing up and getting into coaching. How did that infuse them with that, quote, urgency that they both used in coaching?
Yeah, I mean, both of their dads were 46 years old. So immediately, you know, in Nick Saban's case, he was a graduate assistant at Kent State, his alma mater, and he immediately comes home to a small town in rural West Virginia and tells his mom that he's going to quit coaching and that he is going to take over his dad's service station. His dad had a gas station called Saban Service Station, and that he was going to be the man of the family, the breadwinner, and sort of follow in his dad's footsteps. And it was this conversation took place right on the front porch of their home, and Saban's mom reacted sharply and said, no, you need to create your own path and then follow your own dreams, wherever they may take you. And, you know, that sort of propelled him into coaching. And for Bear Bryant, losing his dad at such a young age, his dad had been sick for a majority of his childhood, and Bryant grew up on a farm in rural Arkansas, and he had to just get up at about 3:30, 4 in the morning, make sure the mules had water and all the feed was out and everything was ready to go. And he had already had sort of almost a day of labor before he went to school. And when he would get to school, his feet would be dirty. He would be covered in dirt. And by his own acknowledgement, he didn't smell good. And he was made fun of by the other kids. And this gave him an inferiority complex, which he carried with him for the rest of his life. But I think losing their fathers at a young age, it showed them how fragile life is. But also, if you're going to do something, go ahead and do it, and don't go half into anything. And both of these guys were full throttle into coaching at a very young age, and had an intensity about them that, yes, all coaches are intense. We know that. But there is something that separates these two guys from the rest of the pack when it comes to college football.
There's a hardline, old-school dynamic to Nick Saban, undoubtedly. But I wonder if Nick Saban is the end of an era, because I don't know if you could coach like Nick Saban now without being Nick Saban. When you've been around him behind the scenes, gotten to see the process up close and personal, does he feel like a throwback to an era that doesn't exist?
Yeah, he does. You know, he doesn't really communicate via email, via social media. He leaves that to his lieutenants. But when you're in his office, or when you're in when he's in a recruit's living room, he knows how to put a sell on, and he makes you feel like you are the most important person in the world in those moments. And he is not great in large, in crowds and in social settings. He comes off as distant and distracted. He's looking at his watch. If he's sitting down, he's tapping his right foot, acting like he has somewhere to go. But when you're with him in his office and having a very sort of interpersonal connection with him, he is fully locked in. And also, I think a defining characteristic of Nick is just his preparedness, for everything. You know, for example, when he goes into the living room of a recruit, the Alabama staff has already prepared basically like, an FBI like dossier on that recruit and his family. They've done what's called a 7-deep dive, meaning they've tried to talk to everybody who has touched that athlete's life, whether it's a guidance counselor, a neighbor, or a family friend. And if the mother is an interior designer, Saban will brush up on interior design and talk about curtains and curtain rods. I mean, there is no detail too extraneous to Saban when it comes to recruiting. And yes, even though he is I think, the second oldest coach in college football right now. He still connects because of all of the research and the background he's done. And plus, he's just flat out smart. I mean, he doesn't like to say that he's the smartest guy in the room, but he usually is.
Lars Anderson has written the book Chasing the Bear. He joins us this morning on the show. Really interesting anecdote I had never heard was that Bear Bryant was worried late in life that he would not get into heaven. That late in his life, he was worried that his bad would outweigh his good. What was the bad that Bear Bryant was worried about?
Well, he put his players through waking hell, for starters. You know, he's known for the Junction Boys training camp when he was a head coach at Texas A&M, not allowing water breaks and even giving his players salt tablets, which only increased their dehydration. And he would have players collapse and on the practice field, and he didn't really believe in being injured. But it was all to foster this culture of toughness, which I know it sounds like every coach wants to do that, but it just was a little bit different at Alabama under Bryant. You know, he won his first national title with undersized players, mostly from the state of Alabama and neighboring states. And it wasn't like they won games because of their athleticism or their sheer power at the line of scrimmage. It was simply they wanted it more, and they were willing to do sort of whatever it took. And, I talked to one of Bryant's physicians who was very close to Bryant late in his life, it was a concern of Bryant's, but also, I mean, it revealed his sort of humanity, and I did try to humanize both guys in this book, which is essentially a dual biography of the two. But I think that's a question that all of us will ponder as we near the end of our lives.
But those that played for Bear Bryant almost unanimously have such a warmth and affection for the Bear, and he could be tough and he could be nasty and he drove them to crazy physical extents. But what was it about Bear that all of his players just have such a warmth about?
You know, that's a fascinating question, and I ran up against that a lot in talking to former players and former coaches of Bryant. I've often said that the facts with Bear Bryant don't sit still. They're sort of moving targets because everybody has their own version of Bryant. And if you talk to enough people, everyone will say that they were his closest confidant. But I think people are so protective of him because he has been a target over the years for perceived racial problems, other problems that plague the entire state and the entire region, and Bryant was a lightning rod for a lot of that. But if you sort of dig into it, Bryant really was sort of at the forefront of trying to lead Alabama to integration of their football team, and really, I mean, it boils down to one thing with him. Like he saw what other teams were doing that were racially integrated. And he simply knew in order to compete with those teams, he needed to do the same thing. And you know, he sort of orchestrated having USC come to Legion Field in Birmingham, an integrated team, and they just laid the wood to Alabama. And that convinced a lot of people that hey, Alabama needs to sort of join the rest of the country here. But yes, the players who played under Bryant have extreme reverence for him. And it's hard to get them to really talk candidly about the man's flaws or weaknesses because they are so protective.
Interesting. We only have about 35 seconds to go, but basically what you're saying is the mythology is partial just protection and a defense mechanism to make sure that Bear Bryant isn't kind of torn down by new critics.
That is exactly right. And I in no way am trying to tear Bear Bryant down here, but I am trying to wade through the mythology to cut to who the man was and what was it about him, what did he do that was distinguishing and made him different that allowed him to win the record 6 national titles that Nick Saban matched. And by the way, both were 66 years old when they won their 6th national title. But if you just look at them physically, Bryant was a worn down old man at 66. Saban is a far cry from that right now.
The book is called Chasing the Bear, How Bear Bryant and Nick Saban Made Alabama the Greatest College Football Program of All Time. Check this book out. College football season is here. There's a lot of crazy similarities between the two men, and this is kind of a dueling biography. As you just heard Lars Anderson mention, he has written for Sports Illustrated for so many years, or did write, and now has written this book, which is really cool. Lars, this is very cool to finally have you on the show, man. Thanks so much, and good luck with the book.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You got it. Lars Anderson joining us this morning on the show. Two really good authors, two really cool college football books. Good conversation, good chatter this morning here on the DA. When we come back, Jared Stidham is going to be the backup in New England for Tom Brady, and there might be an under-the-surface reason for it, and I think it's really interesting. We'll delve into it next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.